behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hi, and welcome to Car Stuff. I'm Scott Benjamin.
And I'm Ben Bolin.
Ben, we've got a topic today that is a listener suggestion. And, man, you know what? First, I guess I better read out some of the cautions that that this listener wanted us to read. His name is Mark Bandoni. He's from Coolidge, Arizona. Wanted a show about the Mazda Miata.
Great idea.
Very good idea. I think it's a topic that's long overdue on this show. And basically, from what this note says here, he wants me to tell listeners that, well, they're girly cars, they're slow, probably Osama bin Laden's car of choice. I think Hitler drove one, too. The car is actually, it lowers your testosterone level when you drive it. It's just a terrible, terrible automobile. It's really, no one should buy one.
Yeah,
really, that's the thrust of this letter here.
Yeah, because Hitler was really big into Miatas in the 90s.
Yeah, especially the Gen 1 and Gen 2 cars. Just stay away. They're just not even worth it. Mark wants to make sure that no one ever buys one ever again.
Where are you going with this?
Okay. The real story on this is that the title of this email is Mazda Miata Disinformation Campaign. He wants us to tell everybody that so that he can gather up all the parts because he absolutely loves his Mazda Miata, and parts are becoming difficult to find.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. So he says, you know, honestly, he's well, here, you know, I'll just read the email about that. All right. So Mark says, first off, I'd like to say I love your podcast. Listen to them at work. Help a 12-hour day go by nice and fast. That's a long day.
That is a long day.
All right. So he currently owns a 1990 Gen 1 edition, I guess, and his wife owns a 95 M edition.
Oh, two Miatas in the family.
Well, his sister also owns a 93, and he talked one of his cousins into picking up a 91 not long ago.
Wow, okay.
So, this is a guy that knows his stuff with Miatas, right?
Mm-hmm.
He says when he first started getting into Miatas, there's pretty negative stigma with them, and some of that stuff that I mentioned, not all of it, of course, it's just that a lot of people thought they were kind of like, I'll just say it, they were a chick car. You know, people thought they were girly cars. They were the car of a hairdresser, as he puts it. Something that not a lot of manly men would want to drive, right?
Yeah, people sort of saw them as a bit effeminate.
Exactly. But he's noticed that, you know, the stigma has started to kind of wear off as more and more people start to discover what, as he says, that awesome and capable these little cars are.
Mm-hmm.
And I completely agree with this email. And I've noticed and I've watched that stigma drop from these cars. In the past. I mean, I've seen, like, what it was and the way they were portrayed in, you know, in, I guess, pop culture, I suppose.
Sure.
And then now what we're seeing on the racetrack, what we're seeing on the streets, they're a fantastic little package, really. I mean, they're really, really nice cars, but like he said, the older versions and some of the parts are becoming harder and harder to find because people do have this interest in them.
Ooh.
So, I guess, you know, he's excited about them because it's kind of like the resurgence of the British Roadster, you know. They were like kind of a type of vehicle that had gone away for so long and then finally came back. I mean, the last time we saw something very similar to it, and I mean, I'm sure there are other examples, but like the MG Midget.
Mm-hmm.
And that type of vehicle and some of the Alfa Romeo Spiders and, you know, the cars like that were the two-seat roadsters that were lightweight, small.
Front engine.
Somewhat practical. I mean, you know, they got decent mileage, not a whole lot of cargo area or anything like that, but, you know, they were a great car to drive around and they were fun to drive.
Mm-hmm.
And, he just wants to mention, you know, like the spec series that they've got now, you know, that you can build your own Mazda Miata spec car. One of the things that he mentions here is that there's a hardtop requirement for the series. And because of that, hardtops are becoming extremely difficult to find. In fact, sometimes a hardtop will be as much as a used Miata car, the entire car.
Ouch.
I know. And he sent some photos of his car, which he calls the Little Bandit. He's named his car the Little Bandit. And it's actually a really cool-looking white Miata. It's 1990. He swapped out a 1.6-liter motor for a more powerful 1.8-liter motor. And, of course, there's a limited slip differential and a turbocharger that he's added. He's got about 200 horsepower in this car that weighs about 2,400 pounds. It's got 270,000 miles on it and, looks fantastic. I mean, some great photos that he sent. And, really, I mean, basically he wanted us to talk about Mazda Miatas for the day. So I think that's what we'll do today.
Mm-hmm.
This is an excellent email, really. I mean, it was funny too. And, you know, the stuff that we led off with, he said just get creative with it. So that's what we're doing. But, maybe saying it was Hitler's car is a little bit too much.
Well, you know, the history might not quite be on our side there, but there is quite a lot of stuff that we could say about the Mazda Miata. First off, you guys are both right about the early, I guess, pop culture conceptions of the Miata. To me, that's strange because when you look at why the Miata came about, it's fairly obvious that Mazda perceived a hole in the market when they started with the 1990 MX-5 Miata. Mm-hmm. They had, Triumph had gave up with MGB in 80.
They had the Spitfire.
Right. The last Fiat 124 Spider was just sold to someone in 85 as a, get this, Pininfarina Azura. Two Z's, two R's. So really at this time, and this is according to Edmunds, the only four-cylinder front-engine classic two-seat roadster that you could get in the U.S. was the Alfa Romeo Spider.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, okay, at the time, I know what you're saying. There were a bunch of them along the way. You mentioned the Triumph Spitfire.
Yeah.
You mentioned the MGB from MG, of course.
Yeah.
The Fiat, the Alfa Romeo. There was also a car called the Lotus Elan that I think some people like to forget along the way. It was not a bad-looking car. It wasn't great. It wasn't anything like the current Lotus cars that we see today. But it was a pretty cool little car. So there was a hole in the market, like you said, and Mazda decided that they're going to do something to bring this back. And that was around, well, it was in the late 80s.
That's when they started planning.
Yeah, they planned in the late 80s. And around 1989, they actually came to market with something that was the first generation Mazda Miata. And it was sold as a 1990 model year car. So, mm-hmm. you know, in 1989, you could buy a 1990 model year. And I think that some of this idea that it wasn't really a strong car, it wasn't really something that a lot of, track loving individuals would like it for, you know, like for a track day car. I mean,
sure.
It just wasn't all that powerful.
Yeah. Before we go on, though, I'm sorry, I'm getting a little out of order here, man. But I've got a little anecdote, a bit of a legend or a rumor about the founding, or the inspiration for the Miata. You
I'd
ready?
Love to hear it. Yeah. Okay. Go ahead.
So in 1979, according to the story, a journalist named Bob Hall was working for Automotive News, and Mazda's managing director asked Bob, hey, what type of cars should Mazda be building? And Hall said, a small open two-seater. And so this might not have led directly to the Miata, but here's what did happen. Bob Hall went to work for Mazda 2 years later in California, and he headed up the Miata development team.
Very interesting. So he had a lot more into this than people really know.
Yeah. So it's now, of course, people will say, you know, we can't put this all on Mr. Hall. We can't say that he was the one man responsible for the Miata, but it is quite possible that he had a huge hand in the success, because what Mazda's aiming for with the Miata in this early period is an affordable sports car. And I think with the emphasis on affordable, I think that is where we see some of the early complaints about power. I mean, it wasn't the most powerful car.
No, but they hit the nail right on the head with the design of this thing. I mean, people were excited about this car. I remember I'm an old guy. I was in high school. I was in high school at this time. I graduated in 89. So in high school, you can imagine kind of the excitement around this car when it was about ready to come out. Cause I'm reading all the auto magazines at the time. You know,
yeah.
That's what I did.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I was always excited about picking up the newest edition on the shelf there, cause you didn't go online to get your information. And, I know, so old. So, you know, you'd be excited about seeing the photos of, you know, the concept sketches and everything all along the way. And then, of course, you know, then it started showing up at the auto show. Like, oh, that looks like a nice car. I hope they stick with that design. And they did.
Yeah.
They stuck with the design. And I'm sure there were some other renditions that, you know, didn't quite make it. So this thing debuted in 1989 at the Chicago Auto Show. And of course, people just went crazy for it. They thought this was a great idea. You know, it's a lightweight two-seat roadster. Front engine, rear-wheel drive, which is critical, I guess, for, you know, a small sports car to have rear-wheel drive. You know, we've talked about minis and things like that have front-wheel drive, and those are fun to drive as well.
Yeah.
But for an open two-seat roadster design like this that's trying to get that throwback feel of the old British roadsters, this is definitely something they needed, the rear-wheel drive layout. And it was something that, you know, no one was doing at the time.
Let's also emphasize, just take a second here to emphasize how tiny the Mazda Miata is. I mean, we're talking about an 89.2-inch wheelbase. It's about 155.2 inches overall. So at this time, it's 16 inches shorter than Mazda's smallest sedan of the year, of that year.
So it's like 13 feet long or something like that. It's 12 feet long. I don't know what it is. I can't do the
off the top math.
Yeah, exactly. But it sounds like, this is something that it's like the shot in the arm that Mazda needed at the time.
Right. And I want to talk about the weight because you mentioned that. And we should really emphasize that, Scott. When it comes out, it's just a little bit over 2,100 pounds.
Yeah, it was actually a really lightweight package. Now it came with a 1.6 or 1.8 liter engine, and mm-hmm. This is for the Gen 1 Miata, which they call the NA, and then of course Gen 2 is NB, and then Gen 3 is NC. So you'll hear it referred to as, you know, the current Miatas is NC sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
That's all that means, really.
Yeah.
So Gen 1, it was 2,070 pounds. So that's about 940 kilograms. And it progressively gained weight as it went up in stages. Now, we know why that happens. We've talked about this so many times.
Yeah.
All the mandatory things that are
safety regulations.
Every mandated bit of safety structure that has to go into this thing, whether it's airbags or if mm-hmm. it's improving the side impact, the bars on the door, all that type of stuff. It adds weight every year. So I don't think I'm letting anything out here when I say that, you know, Gen 2 is, 2,348 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a 278 pound increase in 8 years, because that was in 1998. And then in, Gen 3, which is 2005 to current date,
mm-hmm.
The weight goes way up. It's 2,450 to 2,542 pounds, somewhere in there. That's a range, depending on what engine option you select. And over the original weight, Ben, this thing has gained 472 pounds since the first generation. So you get a Gen 1, it's 472 pounds lighter to begin with than a Gen 3.
Yeah, and the engine does get more powerful as we go through this, but I would argue with the addition of the weight, I don't know how much bigger.
Can I say one thing here?
Yes.
I'm excited about this, and I really want to talk about it.
Okay.
I'm going to wait till the very end of this podcast.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
There's some amazing stuff going on with this, and the weight really doesn't have much of a factor when you talk about what we're going to talk about at the end of this podcast.
Yeah, we're setting it up for
that. There's some fantastic stuff happening out there. So I promise we'll get to it.
Yeah, but just for right now, there's for people to know, during the third generation, there is a 2.0 liter four cylinder, and then for the second generation, I think we're at 1.8 liters, so we've seen it increase.
Yeah, it was, I think the first and second, it was 1.6 or 1.8 for Gen 1 and Gen 2.
Okay.
And then Gen 3, you've got an option between a 1.8 and a 2.0. So, you know, it does go up, and the 2-liter engine, it's pretty strong. It's an inline 4 engine.
Mm-hmm.
It's rated differently for the manual and the automatic. Now, it's 167 horsepower for the 5-speed, and for the automatic, it's 158 horsepower. So, you know, the horsepower is way up there. It's still a strong car.
Yeah,
these things are definitely pulling their weight on the road.
And in the beginning, to go back to 1990, Mazda sold almost 36,000
mm-hmm.
during that first year. So, you know, those aren't like Honda Civic or Honda Accord numbers,
but they are
pretty good. If Edmunds projects that if Mazda could have made 100,000 of these vehicles, then every one of them would have been sold that year. So,
I think that's true. And you know what? I think a lot of people now would really appreciate it if they had made 100,000 because, like our listener who called in about or wrote in about this.
Yeah.
He wants to find all the parts he can. I've got a neighbor who drives one of these that would love to find some parts. He's got a Gen 1 mm-hmm. edition as well. I don't know how many miles that thing's got on. It's been in several accidents.
Really?
Yeah, and it's held up. It's really held up. He's actually put the work into it to keep it on the road. And it looks great. It's a fantastic car. It's British Racing Green, the dark green.
Special edition?
Not special edition,
okay.
No, but I don't think there's anything this guy's going to do to get rid of that car. He's going to hang on to it forever, it seems.
Yeah, somebody's going to inherit it, huh?
I think so, yeah.
So the reason I asked about the special edition, I guess you mean just the color is the British Racing Green.
Yes, yeah, just the color.
Because one of the first Miata special editions, which we should probably pepper throughout this podcast, was the one that had a coat of British Racing Green, which goes back, of course, to British racing cars, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mazda only built 4,000 of these. They had tan leather upholstery, wooden shift knob. Everything was just a little bit of a step up cosmetically interior.
You know what? You're making me second guess myself. I'm going to have to walk over to his house tonight, right after this podcast.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to walk over and just ask him if I can take a look around and see if it is one of these special edition cars, because it has the right color paint, has the right color interior. I don't know if he has a wooden shift knob and wheel and all
that
stuff.
Yeah, look for like stainless steel sill plates.
Hmm, interesting. Okay, I'll check this out because I could see why he's hanging on to it if that's the case. I mean, otherwise, it's a great commuter car. I see him in it all the time. He just gets back and forth to work from it.
Yeah.
Weekend car. Kids drive it occasionally. It seems like a decent
car. He lets his kids drive it?
He does. He does. High school kids, college age kids, and they seem to have a lot of fun in it.
Well, that's really cool, man. That's, okay. Well, I'm getting sidetracked because I'm thinking about how cool it would be to drive one of these. So we've talked about the weight, and we've talked about how successful this is. In 1991, Mazda just decides to do, and if it ain't broke, don't fix it strategy.
Mm-hmm.
And they only change a couple things by adding them to the options, really. You can get a 4-speed automatic transmission. That's one of the biggest ones. They add anti-lock brakes as an option. And as we said, the special edition, came out. Now, special editions are kind of a long-running, Miata specialty, right?
Yeah, they've had quite a few all the way through, through present day, as a matter of fact. There have been so many of these different things. Man, they've got super light editions. They've got matte and black special editions. Just all kinds of add-ons and performance options. Mazda Speed made one. There's a Mazda Speed edition. There's anniversary editions.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, this thing's getting old. I mean, we've talked about, from the beginning, 1990 through 98 was generation one, 98 through 2005 was generation two. So somewhere in there in generation two becomes a 10-year anniversary edition. There's been a 20-year anniversary edition, third generation rather.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a line that's been around for a long time, highly successful. They know that, you know, to sell these special edition cars, you know, they just do a little bit of, you know, trickery with them, you know, like with the, and I don't mean tricking the consumers. I mean,
right.
You know, they're giving it to their in-house tuning division, like, you know, the Mazda Speed division, and saying, why don't you guys have fun with this one? And we're going to make 400 of these cars, and, we're going to label them. We're going to put a badge somewhere on the car that says this is one of 400, and we're going to charge a little bit more for it, but it's going to be exclusive.
Yeah. And it's tweaked, I think, is a good word for it, because you'll see stuff like a new or exclusive paint coat. They're big on the wooden shift knobs. That's a big thing for the special editions.
Yeah, it's a lot of trim work and stuff.
Yeah,
you know, like
the
wooden wheel and stuff like that. It's some of it's throwback stuff, you know, that they want to emulate that look of the old roadsters again.
Mm-hmm.
I totally understand that. You know, one thing that they've done really, really exceptionally well along the way, Ben, and I think we need to point this out, is the soft top.
Oh, yeah, that's a good call.
Yeah, they've got a hard top version, they've got a soft top version.
Ooh.
And the soft top, you know, I don't know if you've ever wrestled with a soft top on a car before. They can be difficult.
Yeah.
Can be extremely difficult. The Mazda Miata version, though, however, the soft top operation is extremely easy.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how easy it was in the early days. I would think that it's close to this, because I've seen my neighbor put his up and down occasionally. But the current edition, the third generation soft top end, you can open and close this thing from the driver's seat in less than 5 seconds.
That's amazing.
It's really amazing. I mean, it's that easy. There's just one latch. It's the center location right above the rearview mirror. You push a release button, open the latch, and push it back with your right arm. And right from the driver's seat, you can fold it right back in place and lock it in a position down below you. And then the exact same motion reverse of the motion to bring it back up again. And it can be done, you know, sitting in a stoplight. You don't have to get out of the car. You don't have to wrestle with anything. A single latch, which is a huge benefit. I mean, I guess in a small car, two latches wouldn't matter really. But I don't know if you've ever really, I've fought with Jeep Wrangler soft tops before. And in the early days, like, you know, not early, early, but I mean, like in the early 90s. Terribly difficult to put up and down.
Oh, brother, tell me about it. Not to be too overly dramatic here, but I feel like I've been personally betrayed by a couple of soft tops. One was in a friend's car.
Yeah.
And it was kind of his car that his father bought it. We're in high school, right? And, he had bought this car clearly so that he could drive it. And, you know, it was his son's car for high school or whatever.
Yeah.
So I remain today, in infamy in a place called Eagles Landing, Georgia, because I was the one who was blamed falsely blamed for breaking a soft top that was, I tell you, honestly, Scott, it was already broken. It bothered me extensively.
Now, to be fair, some of these cars have much larger soft top, of course. And
absolutely.
There's more mechanism underneath the soft top that has to be folded and mm-hmm. you know, coaxed in the right direction. And,
all soft tops are not.
Yeah, there's some swearing involved that has to happen
right.
and does happen. And I just found the Wrangler tops from the early 90s to be extremely difficult. I know they're much easier now. They're not quite as simple, though, as the Mazda Miata top. And you know, again, there's not much there, but I did have that I had that MG for a while,
mm-hmm.
and that was a relatively easy top to operate.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't sound quite as easy as this one because there were actually pieces that you had to take apart. Just it was a different system, but about the same amount of top, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's just they've made it so right in this case. And if you haven't seen it operate, I mean, you can go online and watch people do this. It's so simple. It's kind of one of those things that if that's one thing that's kind of holding you back from buying one of these, don't let it. I mean, it's that easy.
Now, make sure that you already have a hard or a soft top available that works when you buy a Miata, if you buy one, because as we mentioned earlier, the parts can be a bear. Scott, one stat that I want to put in here for the third generation, one of my favorite stats is always the 0-60.
Oh, sure.
So the Miata, the third gen Miata gets 7.5 seconds, 0-60.
That's not bad.
That's not bad.
It's not flying.
It's not flying because, the Mazda Speed Miata, which a variant from 2004, was able to take its turbocharged 1.8 liter and get 0-60 in a little bit less, mid 6 seconds.
So the two liter standard version is a little bit slower than the Mazda Speed 1.8 liter turbo.
Yeah.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah.
Understood.
Which makes sense.
Yeah, I understand. And let's see. I'm trying to think of the, now, the weight we've already talked about, right?
Right.
Two seats. The cargo area, that's got to be a down spot for some people. That it's only got the current version is 5.3 cubic feet of storage space.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very little cargo area.
Yeah.
The mileage is decent, not fantastic, which I don't know. I don't know how to think about this. Around 21 city, 28 highway. Not terrible, not fantastic. I mean,
yeah.
You'd expect a little more from a lightweight car, but it sounds like they're kind of going more for
performance
in this case, yeah, which I understand. And the MSRP on this thing as you'll find is right around $27,500. So, a bit pricey if you're just going to buy something like this for a toy. If you're going to buy it for a commuter car, sounds like it's not a bad idea. You know, it seems decent for some people. I don't know if it's everybody's, you know, cup of tea really, because you can't really have more than one person with you. You can't carry a lot of things.
Right.
It may leave you, you know, in some cases it may leave you kind of stuck without the right vehicle for the right time, you know, the right thing that you're doing.
Sure. This is not necessarily an all-purpose vehicle, but I think it's a great vehicle for what it is, especially if you think, again, going back to the words affordable sports car. They nailed it.
Yeah, fantastic second car is what I would say this is. Really, I think it's a good choice for a weekend car, sometimes commuter, and a second car, of course.
Oh, I meant to ask you something about the weekend, actually.
Sure.
Okay, so I have a little bit of free time. I'll just be working on some stuff for our new website, carstuffshow.com, and I realized that I have some time to watch a couple of movies, but it's been so long since I had some free time. What do you have any picks for me?
Well, let me tell you, it's been a long time since we've recommended any films as well, and I'm excited about this because we're back to kind of our Netflix movie club.
Finally, right?
And I have found a reasonable movie. Now, it's not for everybody.
Okay.
I gotta point that out. It's rated R. It's from 1977. It's called Joyride. And this movie, it's a drama. It's starring Desi Arnaz Jr., Robert Carradine, who is David Carradine's half brother, I guess. Kung Fu Theater, David. And Anne Lockhart and Melanie Griffith, who is really young in this thing.
Oh wow!
1977 again. So, and get this: I was watching the trailer, and I think it was Casey Kasem who was narrating the trailer
because
he used to do that movie thing. You know, before the guy with the deep, deep voice.
In a world.
Exactly. Yeah. Before that guy, Casey Kasem did a lot of movie trailers. And so he's narrating this one. But it's about a group of really bored teenagers who leave the Los Angeles area for an Alaskan adventure. And, you know, they're headed up the up to work on the Alaska pipeline. And, because you know, they find out that it's really difficult and dangerous labor and the money isn't all that great. So they start to look for, as they say, other thrills in the Alaskan wilderness. And they embark on this life of crime.
Okay.
And now they got the law that's, you know, always close behind them. They're in hot pursuit. The tagline, I think, is they went north to get rich and to be free. But, you know, they end up in this life of crime thing. And it becomes almost like a lot of people have said, almost like a Bonnie and Clyde type story.
Oh, I see. So they're on a spree, robbing places. And...
But it's more than just one couple. It's like a couple of couples in this thing. So kind of interesting. Now, why I would pick this is because, you know, I mentioned that the law is always really on them. And there's a lot of cars in this movie that are fantastic cars. There are some old cars, of course, you know, pre 1977. There's a 73 Plymouth Roadrunner, a 57 Pontiac Super Chief, a 62 Ford Galaxy 500, a lot of mid 1960s Impalas. And get this, Ben, one of them drives a 1962 Pontiac ambulance. It looks like one of those, a 62 ambulance that, you know, those look like those giant old 62 hearse cars.
Right, yeah.
Amazing cars. And there's a lot of screen time for that one. So it's in this thing quite a bit. Anyways, it's just it has this like real Bonnie and Clyde feel. And it's just about, you know, kids trying to get away from the big city and do something on their own. But this crime aspect comes in. It's a fascinating story.
All right, and now let's go back because we have to travel back to 2008. Scott, I'm really excited to talk about some of the current developments in Mazda, and I know in Mazda Miatas, and I know you are too. But first, we should probably talk about the big 2008 facelift, right?
Yeah, sure, we can do that. There were some significant changes that came around in 2008, and you know, that's just after the third generation was launched.
Yeah, about 3 years after.
Yeah, that's kind of strange because 3 years after, you know, they said, you know, here's the NC and it's all new.
Mm-hmm.
Here's our latest. And by the way, MX-5 is what they call this thing throughout. So even the Gen 1 versions of the MX-5, Gen 2 is MX-5. We just hear MX-5 now a lot in the marketing and stuff, you know, from Mazda. So that's a little bit of confusion early, you know, that you may pick up along the way. But again, 3 years after they released the NC, which is this third generation, they gave it this big facelift so that they restyled the whole front end to kind of closely match what Mazda was currently doing. And a lot of automakers do that. They try to give it styling cues that you can pick out on the road and say, I can tell from a long distance away that's a Mazda vehicle.
Yeah, some kind of commonalities toward the fleet. So mm-hmm. again, as you could say, they all in some way represent a unified idea.
Exactly. I mean, you think about like Dodge Ram pickups; they have that crosshair grille in the front. You think about you know, the Mazda Miatas; they've got this that certain style, that certain look that, you know, the front end you can just pick out as being a Mazda car.
Sure. Yeah, without even necessarily knowing what type of Mazda it is. This is important to talk about this facelift because for a lot of people who are not too familiar with the history of Mazdas, it's very easy to think that the third generation began in 2008 because that's when you would see the large visual changes.
Mm-hmm.
Stuff like a larger grille, right? The soft top touring and grand touring models have a mesh grille bordered by a chrome frame. Just so everybody knows, I'm stealing from Scott's excellent notes on this one.
Yeah, it's probably a little bit too detailed. I don't know if we really need to do that, but, you know, the Roadster has a different mesh grill. And then, of course, there's new headlights and fog lights. That's important because, you know, that's a completely different look. Restyled side skirts, rear bumper, and the taillights even. Changes went inside as well, right?
Yeah, there's a restyled instrument panel, with different graphics for the gauges. The engine red line, interesting here, was raised by 500, revolutions per minute. At least in the manual shift.
Up to, redline's now at 7,200 RPM, which is, that's really high.
Yeah, they raised the stakes.
Not bad.
Not bad. And they fine-tuned the suspension and gearbox so they would shift a little bit more smoothly, which leads us, I don't know, Scott, is it time? Is it time for us to talk about the future?
I think so, because now it gets a little confusing, but you know, they're talking about a fourth generation of Miata, and that's not going to come as a surprise to anybody, I don't think, because this has been out there for a while.
Right.
You know, Car Stuff listeners are pretty savvy about all this stuff. You know, one thing, can I just, before we do this, I want to say one last word about the third gen before we move on to the fourth gen, because we're getting there and we're nearing the end here.
Right on.
I've been reading a lot of reviews about the third gen Miata. There's a lot of people that have driven it. A lot of, you know, journalists, automotive journalists and people who do blogs and things like that. Well, Autoblog did a test drive of the 2013 Mazda Miata MX-5. And, the guy's name is Jeffrey Ross, the guy that wrote this, this write-up. And it seems to mirror just about everything that I've read anywhere else about the MX-5 Miata. It seems like people really, truly love driving this car. It's a lot of fun. And, I guess there's maybe four or five points or five or six points here that, he brought up that I think, you know, I just, I'm going to summarize this real quick, but, I think everybody else feels the same way. It's fun to drive. It's a well-balanced car. I mean, it's got really good power. Not a lot of power, but good power.
Right.
It's there when you need it. It's easy to operate the soft top, like we talked about, 5 seconds, you know, open to close or close to open. Decent fuel economy that we mentioned, you know, 21 and 28. That's even with spirited driving, as he mentioned. You know, it wasn't hard to hit those numbers. Really small, and this is one thing that may be a downside to some people. See, I like that it's small, but he says it's really small, but it also feels small on the road because you're looking around at, you know, SUV bumpers everywhere when you look to your left or right.
Right. Yeah, so that's true.
It's a tiny feel. It's not great for a primary driver, but, you know, it's fun car to drive. Maybe get it out in the country somewhere and really let it go.
Yeah.
And,
what's the lesson?
Well, I think, you know, the current Miata doesn't offer a lot of the options that are available on some of the other entry-level cars. So, you know, a lot of times people get into a Miata and look around and say, like, well, this is pretty basic. I don't know if I really want to pay this for this type of car. And not realizing that, you know, it's a fun to drive car. It's really meant to be like this throwback roadster type design. They've included what they have to for federal mandates and, you know, what's required, you know, all the safety features and everything.
Sure.
However, it doesn't have, like, you know, I'm going to make something up here, Ben. Maybe it does now, but, it doesn't have inboard, you know, onboard navigation systems, and it doesn't have all the bells and whistles and
heated
everything
seats.
Else. Yeah, it doesn't have heated and cooled seats. Maybe it has heated seats. I don't know. You know, I'm not sure of the entire option list on this thing, but you're going to find that it's a little bit more, and I hate to call it bare bones, but a little bit more scaled back than some of the other cars in its class, maybe.
Yeah, but that's part of the aesthetic, too, and it always has been.
That is, and that's the other thing, is that he said it's like a raw and refreshing feeling when you're driving this, because you're not worried about all this other stuff that's going on. You're not trying to do all this other stuff.
Right. You're not trying to fast forward on your onboard TV screen, right?
Precisely. You're driving the car, and it feels good, and it feels right, and that's what Mazda Miata is all about.
Let me also point out something we didn't mention. These are agile little cars, too. They handle pretty well. And people don't talk about that as much as they should.
No. And it's that size and weight and all that that has to come into it, and
exactly.
Power.
Exactly.
I know Mini kind of has the market cornered on, you know, calling their handling go-kart handling and whiptastic and all that stuff that they use. But Miata's handled really well also. And you can watch that at any track event. You can upgrade suspension components. You can upgrade all kinds of parts, which is kind of leading into what we're talking about in a minute, but not yet.
Okay.
Okay.
Let's do, before we get to, now that's the very last thing, right?
Fourth gen.
Yeah, okay. So let's talk about the fourth gen, the 2014, allegedly, maybe 2015, right?
Yeah, we are hearing 2015 now.
Yeah, and that's kind of an update, because for a while people were saying 2014. Now you can find a lot of talk about the fourth gen everywhere on the internet, some of it contradictory.
Sure. And you can find some renderings of the thing. You can right. see what it's supposed to look like, you mm-hmm. know, what they think it's going to look like. It's an exciting design, I'll tell you that. It's cool.
And it may even be lighter than the current generation. Have you been looking at that?
I did not see any weight stats, but that's cool. That's
well,
good.
This is still, you know, okay. To let the cat out of the bag, whenever we talk about a vehicle before it comes out, there's always this huge asterisk, right? Because mm-hmm. we don't know what may or may not make the final cut, but word on the street is that they're going to be cutting 200 to 300 pounds from the third generation.
Not bad.
Not bad at all. And if that happens, it could affect the driving too if they keep the same engines.
Oh, of course. I don't know if they're going to keep the same engines or not.
I don't think they will.
I doubt if they would. I mean, I don't know why they wouldn't completely update that as well. But just to kind of let people know what's going on. I mean, it's rumored that it was going to come out in late 2013, and then it was kind of bumped to early 2014.
Right.
And now it's 2015. So it's moved back a bit. It's happening. It's just, when is it going to happen? And the thing is that this is, the fourth gen Miata is being co-developed with Alfa Romeo. And yep. What's exciting about this is now Mazda is going to have its own version. There's going to be the Mazda MX-5, which I guess would be the ND platform.
Yep.
ND designation. Mm-hmm. And Alfa Romeo is also going to have a car that they're going to base on this, which is going to be called the Alfa Romeo Spider. So the Alfa Romeo is bringing back the Spider. Mazda is going to have its Miata, the latest MX-5 Miata. And they're both going to have a similar vehicle. They're going to be priced similarly. I mean, I think the Miata is estimated around $25,000, possibly a little more. The Alfa Romeo is, I think, going to be around $30,000, maybe just a little bit more. Kind of depends on the packages that you get, you know, the upgrades.
Yeah.
But watch for that Alfa Romeo to come out. And that's not, by the way, that is not the 4C that we're seeing. There's an Alfa Romeo 4C that's been kind of going around in the blogosphere that I guess that a lot of people are talking about.
Yeah, it's different, though.
It's a different car. There's an Alfa Romeo Spider that's coming as well. And I've seen some – well, I've shown you a picture of this thing.
Oh, yeah, it's beautiful.
It's a good-looking car. It's got, you know, the – I mean, very much the Miata size.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe just a little more rounded, a little more muscular looking. And I think the front end, you know, is clearly Alfa. I mean, it's got that distinctive
triangular.
Yeah, the distinctive grill. Triangular grill and the badging, of course, and different mm-hmm. headlights and everything. So it's its own design.
Oh, and I do have some information. I apologize, guys. It took me a second to get there. I do have some information or some speculation about the fourth generation engine. What I've been seeing is, now I don't want to predict something and be totally wrong, so this is speculative, that I've been seeing that the MX-5 will get a smaller four-cylinder engine. Check this out, Scott. 1.3 liters, but turbocharged.
1.3 turbo, and you know what? I'm not going to let that scare me away one bit, because I know what they do with turbo engines now.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be one powerful 1.3-liter engine.
Right, so they think it'll still hit the 160-ish horsepower that the current larger engine has.
Uh-oh. You said 160?
167.
Oh, man, I don't know, Ben. Okay, that's, you know, I understand that's the current horsepower rating and everything, but I don't know. I feel like they're missing the mark on that. I mean,
you think so?
I don't know. I mean, maybe that's enough. Maybe it's plenty in this car. Maybe it feels great in this car. Maybe there's enough torque.
Maybe they
whatever.
Should raise the stakes.
When you said 167, I'll tell you my eyebrows went up, because I thought it was going to be closer to 200.
Yeah, I'm surprised that they're claiming to make that to keep that equivalent. You
yeah.
know? But as we are about to find out, that's not the end of the story.
Well, and lighter weight too. Okay, so what's the end of the story?
Well, Scott, right before you and I started recording, you hipped me to a little something, right?
Yeah, there's something in the works here. And this is are you talking about what people are doing to the older Miatas?
Yes.
Yeah, now this is an interesting twist on this whole thing. Now, I'm sure that a lot of people have heard of these, and if you haven't, this is going to blow your mind when you see it, or when you watch one of these things in action. Now, I think a lot of people have heard of something called Monster Miatas before. And Monster
right.
Miatas incorporate a V8, a V8 swap, engine swap, into a Mazda Miata with very minimal exterior I guess, adaptations. You know, you're able to swap in these giant V8s. Now, Monster Miata happens to do it with, a Ford V8. They use a 5-liter engine from a Fox Body Mustang donor car. Okay. And it's strong cars, you know, and you can go to, www.monstermiatawebs.com and find out the information about that, all the information. I found a newer kind of version of this thing that maybe is just even more dramatic, I suppose.
Oh, yeah?
More dramatic than the Monster Miata. Flying Miata. And it's actually flying with, you know, the apostrophe at the end. So you can go to flyingmiata.com. And what they specialize in is making Miatas accelerate faster, corner harder, and stop shorter. And they do that with a Corvette engine, Ben.
What?
They drop a Corvette V8, the LS3 engine from a relatively new, like maybe a 2011 Corvette, and they'll put that into a stock Mazda Miata for you.
Wow, and that intro reminds me of the opening for the $6 million man.
It's pretty similar. Now, I mean, I know the Monster Miata, that's kind of the first and the original, and they did it, and they, you know, did it well, and they still do it. But this one, I mean, it's incredible. They can get the horsepower up to 400, I think it's 430 for the standard version, 480 if you have what they call a hot cam kit. And all the way up to 525 horsepower.
Wow.
with other upgrades. So, you know, the 167 that we were talking about in the current version, compare that with 525 horsepower that you can get out of this, this LS3 powered, you know, Miata, which is amazing. I mean, again, Corvette powered Miatas, the 0 to 60 times, what did you say for the current version, the NC3?
It's around, it's a little over 7.5.
Seven and a half?
It's about 7.5.
All right. How would you like to do 0 to 60 in the upper 3-second range?
I would love to do that.
Yeah. Well, it will cost you though, Ben, because this is the downside of this whole thing.
I knew it. All right. Lay it on me.
$45,000 for an entire ground up conversion. Now that's the engine, the brakes, the transmission, all that has to be updated. Of course the brakes, you can't do it without that. So, all that stuff has to be done. You ship in the car, you buy the engine kit and everything else that goes along with it. They put it in for you, they do all the work. It's buttoned up nice and tight. Everything's perfect. But it's going to cost you about $45,000 in addition to giving them the donor car.
Yeah, I was going to say that's not everything because that doesn't count.
But you know what? This is so cool. I mean, it's like you're building your own, and I'm going to say it, a modern day Shelby Cobra. I mean, that's similar in, you know, the weight to horsepower range. And, it's pretty amazing what they're doing. I mean, and for those of you that are worried about weight, get this. It only adds 200 additional pounds of weight to the entire car. So that's an extremely low, you know, difference, I guess. You know, the trade-off is really low. 200 additional pounds, but you're gaining 350 horsepower.
You know, which makes me think that if the fourth gen really does manage to cut 200 to 300 pounds off of the third gen, then you could do that conversion and not really change the total weight. It would still be third gen weight.
Oh, that's a good point, Ben.
That'd probably be more expensive.
How awesome would that be to have, you know, the Gen 4 Miata plus this LS3 conversion from Flying Miata and just absolutely blow everything on the road away because there's nothing that's going to keep up with this. I mean, that's like in the, you're going to have Ferrari performance in a Mazda Miata. You're going to be able to just stomp on anything on the road. I can tell you that. I mean, unless they hear it coming or they know of your car, there's going to be no outward signs that that's in there.
Right. That's a really good point.
Yeah.
You can be a sleeper car.
But you know what? They will hear it. That's going to be a deep, throaty sound in
They will
Mazda
definitely
Miata.
Hear it.
Yeah.
It'll be like that thing where you see somebody who has a voice that completely doesn't sound like it should from a person that looks like
it. Understood. So, again, Monster Miata, Flying Miata, your choice. And I'm sure there's a couple others out there that are doing it. People probably doing it in their own garage.
Yeah.
But... man, there's some amazing upgrade kits that you can do with these things.
And if you have a Mazda Miata that you have upgraded or just maintained, then send us a picture. We hope that you have enjoyed this podcast. I'd like to thank Mark again for such an excellent email. I can always tell it's a really good email when you come in with some notes on it and a couple of things.
Yeah, I had added a few things of my own in it.
Yeah, and we hope that you enjoyed this. It looks like the future is bright for the Miata, and we're excited to see what actually comes out with this fourth generation, especially with that Alfa Romeo. In the meantime, we're going to get on the road here, and we hope to hear from you soon. You can write to us on Facebook, drop us a tweet on Twitter, or even send us a good old-fashioned email. Our address is
carstuff@discovery.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@HowStuffWorks.com.